No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and that affect the lives of all of us. Today, we're going to start our show with a special guest named Janice Stango, Executive Director of Rebuilding Together, an interesting organization that helps seniors stay in their home. But before we get started, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who is here in Washington by way of Kansas, by way of San Diego, by way of Arizona. Hi, Kathleen. As always, thanks for getting the thing started. I think that we should have, where in the world is Kathleen Gomez? She's all over the place these days.
I know. I am. I'm a traveler. I'm on the job looking for a, what would you say, a job, and who knows what will happen.
Yeah, well, we hope you find one. Today we're going to have Janice Stango, who's with Rebuilding. I'm sorry, we're having a few little technical problem here, but we're straightening it out right now. Today we're going to have Janice Stango, who's with Rebuilding Together, an interesting organization that helps people stay in their homes. And we met Janice. Hold on a second. Just one second. Okay, we've got to straighten out now. I met Janice at the 4th of July parade, of all places. My wife ran into her and started talking to her, and we got into a conversation about what she does, and I think it's just really, really interesting. And, you know, we love to promote organizations on the show that are doing creative things, especially grassroots kind of organizations. And, well, before I go on any further, let me introduce Janice, and she can tell us what she does. Janice, are you there?
I am here, ready.
Great. Well, tell us what you do. I just found it so interesting when we talked about what tell us what Rebuilding Together is and how it started and what it is you do for the people of Washington, D.C.
Well, many of people still recognize us from an old name that we had years ago called Christmas in April of Washington, D.C., but we are the same organization with a few differences. We are a year-round program that renovates for free, at no cost to the homeowners, the homes of low-income homeowners in the District of Columbia. Our big specialty is making homes handicap accessible so that our senior citizens and the disabled can age in place in their homes. And what we do is we bring in teams of volunteers, and if we are fortunate enough to raise enough money, we can hire some skilled people to supplement the work of volunteers. And we can build wheelchair ramps. We can put grab bars in your bathroom so you don't fall and break your hip. We can give you a raised toilet seat. If you only have a bathtub, we can put a transfer seat in so that you can easily get in and out of it, or more easily get in and out of it as you age and might have mobility problems, so that you can bathe. We can paint your house. If, again, depending on budget constraints, we're able to do plumbing and electrical work. And we even put on new roofs, all at no cost to homeowners if roofs leak. And we're fortunate enough to have enough money that we've raised from individual donations and corporate sponsors and service club organization and church groups and those sorts of groups who contribute to us and put together teams of volunteers, and we go in and do the work. In order to be eligible, you have to be of moderate income, and we define that as basically a household income of under $55,000, but that's a dream income for many of the people we serve.
Yeah.
The average income of the folks we're helping is well under $20,000, closer to $12,000 to $15,000 a year. These are the folks that are living just on Social Security checks, and they struggle to even buy food and get their prescription meds and pay their utility bills. But they've lived in their home. We've had some people who have lived in their home for as long as 70 years, and they want to age in place and stay there.
Absolutely. I think it's such a wonderful idea. And the thing, you know, as I get older, I appreciate it more and more. And I took care of an elderly aunt who ended up the way so many elderly people do. She lived in a low-income housing project, and she broke her hip. And she fell and broke her hip. And that led her to, of course, a hospital and a rehab facility and a nursing home. And she was in a really, really nice nursing home. But even a nice nursing home is a really, really dismal place. You know, I think it would have been so much better if we could have kept her in the house that or in the apartment that she lived in. But unfortunately, that was not the way it ended for her. And I think it ends that way for a lot of people. So it's great that you do this. And the thing that impressed me most about what you do is that you do it without government money. You do it with money that you get from private individuals. Now, are there businesses that support this?
Yeah, our business model is really to ask for a sponsorship from a team of volunteers that you would contribute anywhere from $4,000 up to $10,000 if you're a team of volunteers coming from a corporation or a group. And that allows us to we never use volunteers to put on a roof because it's too,
right.
for a whole lot of reasons, liability
right.
issues, danger, people don't know how to do it correctly, you got to get it right.
right.
So we have roofers that give us a good deal, and we will start by putting a roof on if the roof leaks. If we don't have the money to fix the roof and your roof leaks, we really can't help you because it's
right.
ridiculous. You're not going to repaint the walls and fix the plaster that's broken from the dripping ceilings from the leak in the roof if we don't have the money to fix the roof. So the roofs are our big, big expense and something that we never have enough money to do, and our waiting list for roofs is humongous. We go in there, and so our model is to take individual contributions of any amount, but if you are a team of volunteers from an organization or a religious group or a service club that want to help us, we do have an established fee. And we field these teams, and some big companies do as many as 12, 14 houses for. We had one corporation, Booz Allen Hamilton, that did 14 houses with us this year.
Wow.
And we were started by a neighborhood church group at St. Columbus, at Tenleytown.
Wow.
And we're not a religious organization, but that's how we started.
Let me ask you a question. As I'm understanding this, this is something that you do for people to keep elderly people in their home so that they can stay there and not have to go somewhere else. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's the goal. That allows people to age in place. And we focus on people who are elderly, disabled, families with young children, veterans. And we do also work at some community facilities that serve that group of those groups of people.
Wow. How old has your organization been in existence?
We've been in existence since August of 1983, so we are entering, just about to start our 32nd year in the District of Columbia. And again, we've never applied for or gotten any city money or government loans. We do this all with money that we raise in the community. That may have to change. We may have to start trying to seek some money from the district because fundraising ever since the recession of 2008 has been harder and harder and harder. But we've been able to do it just with contributions because of our business model that requires the sponsorship fee from the teams that actually go in and help do the work.
So they get like Rotary. I belong to a Rotary Club. And if they wanted to get involved, then they would pay a fee to actually go in and help this, say, a house put in new toilets and stuff like that?
Yes, that's exactly right. Now, we have had the support of the Rotary for some years, not every year. Mm-hmm. Last year we didn't get anything, but we did the year before, got a few $1,000 in some past years. And Rotary has never fielded a team of volunteers to come in and work. They've just given us a grant for us to use, and we use that well on roofs and other things. But it's interesting that you say that, because I had an email about 2 hours ago from someone from is there another group of, not the Rotary, but another word like Rotary?
I'm trying to think.
There's another group affiliated with the Rotary where someone wants to talk to me this week about whether they can field a volunteer team and come and actually do the work. We would love to have the Rotary, the Rotarians come in and actually work on a house. That would be fabulous.
That's great. Well, and, Rotarians are a great club.
And you know, Janice, I was a former ANC commissioner, and the ANCs give out grants. So maybe since you work in the District of Columbia, you could apply for some of those grants, because I think this is a great idea. Kathleen and I both started our political careers together working for Jimmy Carter. And mm-hmm. as you well know, his involvement with Habitat for Humanity in starting that up, we've always been proud of what that organization has done. And your organization sounds very similar, but on a local
It's more localized. There are about 160 chapters of Rebuilding Together around the country. Said, it did really start here in the district. But the reality is that Habitat builds new houses for people,
right,
where we are. I don't really know what their demographics are, but you know, they tend to get more of the younger starting out first-time homebuyers, families, where we're at the other age of the spectrum. You've been in your house for a long time, and you want to stay there, and it the repairs have gotten away from you because you're living on this modest income now for whatever reason. You're in your golden years, or you got disabled, you're in an accident, and you lost your job, and now you have a small Social Security stipend, but it's not enough, and God forbid your roof starts to leak, you're never going to get, if you're making $12,000 a year and your roof is going to cost $5,000 to fix, you're never going to have that money. So you fix it, and then one problem leads to another. The longer it goes unfixed, the worse the problems get. The water gets into the walls. It trickles down the walls. It blows out the electrical outlets. Mold develops, the ceilings start to collapse, the walls start to collapse. And I'm not exaggerating, this is the kind of situation that we see every day. And the letters that we get on our applications, we ask for a homeowner statement. You know, why do you think we should help you? And the stories that we hear, we have one lady who was calling us all the time, and she wrote, "Please help me. When I was laying in bed last week, the ceiling literally fell in on me." In a rainstorm. And that is not an unusual situation. We hear this sort of thing all the time. We had a gentleman this year who was a double amputee, and he had no wheelchair ramp to get out. We were able to put a concrete ramp out his back door, and he can get out now. We had a woman who was the wife of a World War II veteran that we helped this year with a wheelchair ramp. She couldn't get out of the house, double amputee. Her husband had to carry her out. He's in his 80s. We put this fabulous ramp in that our volunteers were able to build. And the first thing she said to us is, "I can rejoin the church choir because I can get out now." Never mind, she can get to the doctor and other things, but she's going to have a life again. She's going to get back into the community.
And well, you know,
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kathleen.
You know what also is a really big problem, I think, is that when people are in their homes, you know, their property values have increased. I came to visit D.C. You know, I've been living in Arizona. And it's such a different city. It's quite amazing. And as I started to look around to see what things would cost, everything is very high. Do you find a situation where people, you know, it's even difficult, I would imagine, to meet their taxes? Tax obligation.
Well, to be perfectly honest, we're not really operating in the higher inflated property value neighborhoods. We do most of our work is done east of the river, where you haven't seen that kind of increase in property values that you're talking about. They might be modest or minimal, whatnot. But we see the tax bills, and they're they're fairly low. And the reality is that we're not working on the big freestanding homes. You know, these are modest little row houses and whatnot. So I'm not saying it's easy for people to pay their taxes. We do have a question on your application as to whether you're current with your property taxes. And occasionally people are not. But that's sort of the thing in their utility bills that they tend to pay the most. They more likely would be behind in utility bills than on taxes because they want to stay in that home and keep it.
Wow.
Well, and we have several programs in the District of Columbia. They're pretty good in terms of seniors get a tax break. If you live in your home, you get a homestead exemption. So we do have a little tax relief, especially for older people. And there's a new law, actually, that's just been put on the books that if you've lived in your house for more than 10 years and you're a senior citizen, you're going to get complete tax relief in the future. So that's a good thing.
Is there going to be an income limit on that?
I'm not sure. That's a good question. I would speculate that there will be an income limit on that. Yes. I think you have to make below a certain amount of money, but I don't know what it is right off the top of my head. And the law hasn't gone into effect yet. It was just brought up in the last council session by a couple of council members. And I think it's a good idea, and it passed preliminarily. As you probably know, every piece of legislation that we pass in the district has to go to Congress and wait for 30 or 60 legislative days, depending on the type of legislation it is, before it's passed. So it actually hasn't become a law yet, but it's pending, and it looks like it's going to happen. But, yeah, there probably is an income limit on it.
Well, we
but,
certainly you know, can help spread the word on that to the homeowners that we serve around the city. And we do most of our work. We are in every ward, but to be perfectly honest, I've been the executive director for 18 years. We've only done one house in Ward 3 in 18 years.
Right.
We spend most of our time over in Ward 7 because there's a very high degree of elderly disabled folks there who are homeowners. We're also in Ward 8 in the Anacostia neighborhoods and Congress Heights and many neighborhoods there. And we are also on Capitol Hill, and people who have been there, not every house is gentrified. There are plenty of people still there that have been there for 40 years. We had a woman last year, we'll call her Mrs. J for her privacy. She she's a polio survivor. She had contracted polio.
Wow.
You don't hear about that very much. Wheelchair bound, living on the first floor of her row house on Capitol Hill, not far off of H Street. And she lived there with her parents when she grew up. Once she started to work, she actually co-bought the house with her parents, doesn't want to leave, helps to house some of her cousins who are elderly in there with her who help her out a bit. But she only has one bathroom, which is the typical situation in the district. There's one bathroom in a row house, and it's on the second floor. Once you become physically disabled, we see this all the time. The dining room table gets moved out, and people start living in the dining room as their bedroom. And they have a little porta potty there and a little wash basin where they sponge bathe, and they don't get upstairs. But we had a woman this year also on Capitol. For the woman that I was talking about last year, we were able, thanks to the good folks at Clark Construction, they came in and they built a whole bathroom on the first floor for her. So she has a bathroom.
Great.
We had one this year where the poor woman couldn't get out very well. Somebody had to carry her, and let's just say she wasn't the thinnest person in the world. It was very difficult for people. Her own daughter was unable to visit her for a year and a half because the daughter couldn't navigate the steps to get up the front steps of the house. We were able to put in two chairlifts, one to get up the front steps and then one from the dining room where this wonderful woman's bed is to get her upstairs to the bathroom. And we have a picture of her daughter on the outdoor chairlift going in to visit her mother for the first time in a year and a half.
Wow. Well, you know, this is very important. It's very important to keep, just like Habitat for Humanity is important, it's important to help young people, and it's important to help old people, because that's what makes a community vibrant, I think, in my opinion.
These are the people that built these communities.
Yes, people that built these communities, right. We have an obligation as well, I think, as you point out by that statement, to help these people, because they did build the communities. But they also add so much to the richness of a place like the District of Columbia. And for those of you who may not live in the district and don't know what Ward 7 and Ward 8 are, they're the wards that are east of the river, and that's where the poorest people in the District of Columbia live. It's sad that in our city, we really, really have two cities. We have a very wealthy community in wards 2 and 3. I live in Ward 3, and a somewhat, somewhat more of a mixed community in wards 4 and 5. And 6 is a split between rich and poor. And then 7 and 8 is pretty much the poorest part of the city. So the place where Janice does most of her work is the poorest part of the city. And I admire you for doing that. And I also admire you for doing it on your own. You know, it just shows how much difference people can make when they come together around a good idea.
Well, we have over 2,000 volunteers a year that help us out. So we're hardly doing it alone. But the whole organization is an example of one person making a difference. There was an organization in Midland, Texas, and the original person, Trevor Armbruster, who was a writer and ultimately an editor at Reader's Digest and a congregant at St. Columbus Episcopal Church at Tenleytown, he was assigned to go to Midland, Texas, and to find out what a group was doing down there to help their senior citizens. And the way Trevor used to tell the story, Trevor has passed on, God bless him, but he used to tell the story that he didn't really want to go, you know, it didn't sound like an exciting story to him. And when he got there, he was so enthralled with what people were doing to help seniors and the disabled stay in their homes that he came back and started it up in D.C., and he got a whole bunch of the churches involved. And then, like I said, though, we're not a religiously affiliated organization, but that's how it started. And then they got some corporate sponsors, and some of the schools helped out, some of the private schools. And then he brought it into Montgomery and PG and Arlington and Fairfax. It spread throughout this metropolitan area. We have a lot of chapters here. And there you go. And talk about one person making a difference. And every one of our 2,000 volunteers that help in the District of Columbia every year, they make a remarkable difference. There's a euphoria that comes that from volunteer groups when all of a sudden someone can get in and out of their house. All of a sudden someone's able to use their bathroom because it doesn't leak anymore. And any number of other repairs that we make, we truly change people's lives. And with more donations, we could do more. We have an enormous waiting list.
Let me ask you something. If you wanted to get in touch and volunteer for your organization, how would you do that?
Well, the first way people can get involved is by finding out more about us and going to our website, which is rebuildingtogetherdc.org. Don't forget the DC. Rebuildingtogetherdc.org is our website. And all the information on how to sponsor a phone, a project, a home, and how to field a volunteer team to make it happen is on that website.
That's great.
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kathleen.
One more question. Is there any organizations that have just been like you would like to give a shout out who have been there for you guys and constantly give every year and that you just think, you know, kind of need a special recognition?
Well, Clark Construction are just an angelic group of volunteers, and they have from the top down, they have corporate dedication to helping this community where they build so many big buildings. They help us with our most difficult projects every year. Booz Allen Hamilton sponsors the most houses every year. There are so many churches that have been involved since the beginning, 32 years ago. St. Columbus, St. John's, Lafayette Square, Dumbarton Oaks in Georgetown. so many groups of people that have done this for 32 years. They have fielded teams and come out and helped us year after year.
And I want to point something out too, Janice. When I say that you're doing this on your own, I know you have a lot of support, but the thing that I really admire is you're not going to the government. You're not asking for sponsorship, government money to sponsor you. You're out there trying to figure out how to do it and developing a business model that brings people in the community together. And that's really what our show is supposed to be about. And what Kathleen and I try to make it about is bringing people together to come up with great solutions. And I think that you certainly have. And we thank you so much for being on our show today. And I hope that you'll come back again in the future and let us know how it's going. And I hope people out there will tune into your website. We'll get onto your website and look at what you're doing and get involved, because this is really important work. So give us your website one last time.
RebuildingTogetherDC.org. And please, all the donations, we have an extremely low administrative rate, under 10%. We only have a staff of two people, myself and one other person. So we have a working board of directors, and these volunteers are the ones that make it happen. So, you give us money, we're going to put up a grab bar in someone's bathroom. We make it happen and have very low administrative costs, and we genuinely change lives here in the district.
And contributions to your organization are tax deductible?
Fully tax deductible. 100% is tax deductible.
Great. So let's everybody kick in a little to rebuilding together, and we can help more people stay in the District of Columbia. And that's what we really need. We need a rich mosaic of old and young and people of every background in the district. And we thank you, Janice Tango, for being on our show. And we thank you for doing such good work in our community. And we hope to get to talk to you again soon.
Well, it's my pleasure, and it's my pleasure to serve this community. And when you go to that website, don't forget the DC, RebuildingTogetherDC.org, because there's a lot of other Rebuilding Togethers, but we are the third poorest city in the United States, which people don't realize. And every census tract in this metropolitan area that's rated impoverished is inside the city of D.C. So we're just looking for help for the city. So RebuildingTogetherDC.org.
Okay. Thanks, Janice.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Janice. Bye-bye. Bye.
Now on to something even more important. Kathleen Gomez is manically depressed because her team just lost the World Cup
by 1 point.
By 1 point, one little goal, and her sons are divided on this. She lives in a house divided because her son Diego's a Germany fan, right?
Yes, it's the beginning of time.
Yes, and her son Mateo was rooting for Argentina from day one.
Yeah.
So tell us, Kathleen, what this all means. You know, when I was a kid, I never played soccer. I didn't play many sports because I wasn't very good at it. But soccer was that strange thing they did in Europe. We didn't understand it.
And Latin America.
Right, I know. Africa. It's actually really played all over the world.
That's right. I mean, I think really, the U.S. was just football, their football. Yeah. Is just different. We just never really acknowledge it until really, remember when Kissinger brought the World Cup to the United States, really kind of started to really the kick that everyone got into it. And then all of a sudden it's all over the schools. But yes, both my sons have been in soccer since they were maybe four. And we had been at the World Cup in Germany, which I guess it was in 2006, and saw Argentina and Germany play at that time. And my son, typical garb, the whole Germany thing, the hats, the shirts, the jerseys, and he was Germany, and it was me, and then it was my other son, Mateo, in Argentina. And when Germany won, the older one was running around screaming and yelling, and my younger one, he was only maybe about 6 or 7, was crying, and all these Argentinian men were, it was okay, they're all crying together, and then, you know, the other Germans were going nuts, and one person said to me, how does that happen? You know, families are all together, united, and they all kind of like, you know, go for one country. And I said, well, I don't know. I mean, we're from America. He goes, well, only Americans, you know, like only Americans we would have the family split in two. But it's carried on for a long time. And, of course, Diego has been calling his younger brother and pushing buttons. But it broke my heart. I wanted Argentina to win. And my younger son, Mateo, texted me and said, talk on the show about how they have to bring reviews into the World Cup, because these officials were awful. I'm sorry, the FIFA officials made so many bad calls. And, I mean, I don't know where they get these guys, but, you know, FIFA has come under a lot of scrutiny. There's a lot of corruption. There's a lot of supposedly officials and things on the take. But one thing I think that would improve the World Cup is that during those, you know, like the replays, like, you know how you have a replay in football or right. or something like that, where they'll, or like in tennis, you know how they, did you see the Wimbledon? That was a great game. But they actually look at where the ball lands and then they will call it afterwards if you challenge it. So what he was saying is that, you know, the refs did make a lot of bad decisions and it was kind of a joke, and that they should introduce the reviews. And I think he's right. A lot of times the cards were called on things that just, you know, they weren't really penalties. And a lot of times the cards should have been pulled when it was obvious, you know, penalties. So I think if they were to do that, it would maybe make, I think it would do the trick of making the World Cup seem more, not based so much on emotion and, you know, on this theory, you know, everyone's on the take, but it would be more of a professional, kind of a playing level where you could actually go back and look at the replay to see how what happened.
Well, I think
I'm sad. Oh my God. Sorry.
I think it's helped sports like football and basketball in the United States, the instant replay. But I will say the one common thread ties all professional sports together is that the losing team always says is because of bad officiating. They never say we didn't do a good job. They always say the officials lost it up. So I just want to point that out. But I know it's a sad day, and congratulations, Diego. You have all my sympathy, Mateo. I've been a fan of Washington football for a long time, so I know how much it hurts to lose, and especially to your rival. You know, we here in Washington, when our football team loses to the Dallas Cowboys, it's more depressing. I went to the University of Maryland, and when we lose to Duke, it's more depressing. These are our big rivals, so I know it's a depressing day for you guys.
And, you know, what it was a big breakthrough is that I think this is the first time a European country won in Latin America. So it was kind of like, you know, historic, too. You know, there was a lot of historic moments, you know, when the Netherlands beat Brazil. Was it Brazil or Germany? I forget now. There's so many games. But, you know, when they scored 7-1, that was like a record historical moment. And there were a lot of them. And, you know, when the guy bit from was it Uruguay, whatever, when he bit the other gentleman on the back. I mean, there was some really interesting soccer being played. I want to say that I think the U.S. team has really come a long way. They played great. And that goalie, Tim Howard, I kind of thought he should have got goalie of the game. I know, you know, it doesn't work that way, but he was incredible. And then, you know, there was just really, really, really good soccer. And it's interesting that underneath it all, you know, there's been a lot of demonstrations that this was a very expensive venture, that there should have been money, that money should have been spent on the health of the Brazilians and education and, you know, roads and that type of thing. And it'll be interesting to see, although it seems to me they've kept it very quiet and haven't let the media really get into those issues. But it'd be interesting because they'll be hosting the Summer Olympics in 2 years.
Yep. Well, and you know, I think as well as the American team did, and as much excitement as this generated, we had huge, just gigantic watch parties here in Washington, D.C. So I think, you know, it's really raised the visibility of the sport a lot here in the United States. We go to D.C. United soccer games from time to time. My son, I should point out, I'm not sure who he was rooting for. I think he said that he thought Germany was going to win right from the beginning, but I can't remember. But Nick played on the city championship high school soccer team, so he's a big soccer player too, and it's a great sport. It really is. I have so much respect for these guys, and you can start playing in it. I think my kids, all three of my kids, started playing it when they were like 4 years old, and my oldest daughter and my son Nick played it all the way through high school. And it's just been a great sport. And so my hat is off to the German people and the German fans. And my heart goes out to Argentina because they really played a really tough game. And now we're going to take a little break before we come back and talk about what's going on with statehood in the District of Columbia. We're going to take a little break. And here's a song from Shakira in honor of all the World Cup fans out there. Here's Shakira with La La La. Back in a minute.
Essa bola vai rolar, dundu é tapete verde. Quando a bola chega lá, coração fica na rede, na rede, na rede. Olá, olá!
Well, and I hope that heals some of the pain for you, Kathleen, because I know that it was a hard blow to see your team lose. But now we're going to talk a little bit about D.C. statehood, which is one of the reasons that we do this show and the primary reason. And then we're going to move on to a couple other subjects. On Tuesday, we haven't gotten any new co-sponsors on our bills in the House, in the Senate. The last one, and I'm proud to say that I was involved in helping get that, was from in the House from Margie Kaptur, from Toledo, Ohio. But we're looking for more co-sponsors. So a great guy named Josh Birch and a group called the D.C. Statehood Coalition, of which I am a member, is going to go up to the House on Tuesday, on July 15th, and they're going to meet in the, if you're out there listening in D.C., they're going to meet in the Rayburn House office cafeteria, and you should contact Josh Birch at Neighbors United for D.C. Statehood, and he'll tell you all about it, and they're going to visit offices and try to get some more co-sponsors for the bill in the House. Meanwhile, Ken and I are working together on doing a project in the Senate, which is now tentatively scheduled for the following week. And we're going to deliver 51-star flags, which we had custom made. We're going to deliver them to members of the Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee. There's 16 members. And thus far on the committee, the only co-sponsor we have is the introducer of the bill, Senator Carper. Thank you so much, Senator. He's the senator from Delaware who's put the bill. We're going to go up and we're going to give 51-star flags to the senators to remind them that not only 200,000 people from the District of Columbia have served during wartime, but has a special connection to the district. Francis Scott Key, mission for the D.C. National Guard when he was captured by the British, and poem became our national anthem. And the man that wrote Taps, General Butterfield, is a Washington, D.C. Congressional Medal of Honor winner who wrote the song Taps, or arranged the for Taps. So every time the flag is raised and every time it's lowered, there's a Washingtonian involved. And we want these guys to remember that we were part of America since America began, and that 200,000 of us have put lives on the line to defend our, and it's time to make the District of Columbia the 51st state and add our star to the flag.
Right, so, right. And that's what we're going to do it on the July 22nd on Tuesday. We're actually going to go up, right, and present these.
Yeah. I'll schedule for July 2nd to see if we can get some other things going out, going on. But, yes, it looks like July 22nd is going to be. And, you know, the flag's been changed 26 times since Betsy Ross sat down and made the first one. So we think it's time to change it for the 27th time and add a star to it. People, they've spent more than 200 years paying homage to the flag, ending it, and making sure that the people in the District of Columbia are safe. So I'm sorry, in the nation are safe on behalf of the people of the District of Columbia. So it's time to get that star on the flag. So do us a favor. If you're out there listening in Washington, D.C., go join the D.C. Statehood Coalition on Tuesday and go up to the House and lobby and come join us in the Senate a week from Tuesday.
Yes, it's going to be a really, really great event. And as you said, right, you had veterans pack the boxes. And I just don't understand why Washingtonians and the Hill can't understand that it's just, this is just wrong not to have D.C. have representation. So
yeah,
I think it's going to be crazy. A great event.
Yes, I think it will be too. And let's talk about a few other things before we get off the air tonight. Again, if you're out there and you're an advocate for guns, we'd love to hear from you because six more people were killed in a mass shooting in Texas when an estranged husband walked in looking for his ex-wife and killed her sister, her husband, and their four children. So will somebody please call me and tell me how guns are making us safer, because I don't understand it. I'll tell you, it doesn't seem to me that guns are making us, having people own guns without any restrictions, without background checks, are making us safer. You know, we have to find a way to keep them out of the hands of crazy people. Nobody wants to overturn the Second Amendment. We just want to keep the guns away from people that shouldn't have them. And, you know, everything else in our society is regulated. You can't have a damn dog without a license. You can't have a car without a license and a registration. You can't have anything that's potentially dangerous in our society without registering it. But this one thing that really is just designed for one purpose, and that is to kill people. Things that's not dangerous enough that we need to license it or register or have a registration for it or provide any other safeguards for it. I just don't understand that. So if you're out there and you can explain that to me, please call us.
And you know, the number to call us, because we'd love to hear from people out there, is 888-627-6008. Again, 888-627-6008, or Skype us on BBS Radio 1.
And, you know, we keep on hearing from people how important the Second Amendment is, but Kathleen and I come on week after week and we talk about this and nobody ever calls in about this issue. We've had lots of, we've had gun control people on the show who have talked about this, but we've invited gun advocates many, many times and they won't come on. And I think that says a lot about the issue.
Yes, I think so. Well, you know, I think the problem is that maybe it's just that everyone has a definite decision and they're just not going to change and they're not going to try to be able to come together to make a compromise. And I think, you know, we're at the point that back in the day of the Wild Wild West, and you didn't see people for many days when you would ride your horse or your wagon or whatever it is, of course a gun was necessary. But, you know, there should be a way to figure out these people who are just not stable should not have access to guns. So I don't know. There has to be a way to either make parents or doctors, I don't know what the answer is, but we got to start talking so that these things don't happen as often as they are. And well, I'll just say I'm not somebody, I believe in everyone should be able to have a gun, especially in situations we've talked about this. We have different views, but there's just so many crazy people all of a sudden. What is going on that they have access to it? And I guess, you know, everyone says to me, well, you're always going to have crazy people and you know, you're always going to have, you know, the bad guys. But this is getting a little bit out of hand and we really have to come to grips somehow, some way.
Well, you know, I think, I got to tell you, I think it's a matter of control. I think that people like to have control, and that's what the whole gun thing is. They want control. Well, I'm willing to give up some control and recognize that the Second Amendment gives people the right to law-abiding citizens to own guns. But there are no unlimited rights in the Constitution. Even the First Amendment has limitations. So I want to see us come up with a reasonable policy. But I really think it's a matter of control. People feel more in control. I think that if you rented parachutes to people that were going on commercial airlines, that lots of people would rent them, even though the idea that they could use them is pretty ridiculous. They probably wouldn't be able to use them. But I think they feel more in control. And I think that's what guns do. I think guns make people feel more in control. But it's a false illusion because you have situations like this. They don't defend you against people breaking in your home. I mean, once in a blue moon, you hear about somebody shooting an intruder. It's much more likely that your ex-brother-in-law is going to come in and kill your kids. I mean, that's the reality. And we seem to have our heads buried in the sand and we think that we all need to protect ourselves. But in the truth of the matter, I mean, look at what happened here at the Navy Yard. Some nut comes on the Navy Yard with a gun. Now, there's so many people that are armed on the Navy Yard that the local police chief said this week that they didn't intervene at first because they thought because it was a military installation, there were so many armed people on the military installation that surely they would be able to defend against this intruder. But they weren't able to do it. I mean, they finally took him out, but look at how many people he took out before they got him. And you know, and that's the thing. It's crazy for us to say that we're safer with these. We're not safer with them.
Well, I don't know. Look, if you're a single woman and you're living, you know, like I was thinking to myself, if I had moved to D.C., what if I had to live in an area that has more crime? And, you know, I don't know that I would feel... I think I would feel safer if I had a gun because, you know, there is a lot of break-ins and there are a lot of house, what do they call them, intrusions, or where they, you know, come in and, you know, things happen. And so I can understand it. I guess if you are a parent and you know you have a child who's giving you trouble, who's got behavior problems, who's not doing good in school, who's angry, you know, don't let him go shoot guns. I mean, don't think that that's a way to get out his, you know, to make him feel better or bring his self-confidence. Parents are going to have to start, and everyone, you know, is going to have to start looking at people that we think, you know, have emotional problems or mental problems. And if we know they have guns, we've got to intervene. We've got to get involved. And that's what people don't want to do. They don't want to get involved.
Well, and I accept your right as a woman that wants to protect herself to own a gun. You're a responsible person. You've never been convicted of a crime. You know, I think you're a little crazy, but that's a personal thing. You know, I think that, you know, people like you should be allowed to own guns. I really do. If that's what they want. And I accept that right. And I think that what we need to do is we need to have gun owners accept the right that they need to, the responsibility, because every right comes with a responsibility. And I think there are lots of gun owners out there, the majority of them actually, that, you know, studies have shown want background checks. They want to be responsible. And it just bothers me that we have this group, the National Rifle Association, that wraps itself in the American flag, that talks about freedom and justice, but they're really just shills for the gun industry. They could care less how many kids get killed. They just want to sell more guns. It's like having the drug industry out there being protected and allowing the drugs to be sold to elementary school kids without doctor's approval or, you know, I mean, it's just crazy. It's crazy that we let these guys have so much power over us. I think most gun owners are responsible people. I don't have any problem with that. I don't want a gun personally. I don't want it around my children. I've lived in the inner city. I've lived in bad neighborhoods, and I think the most important thing is to use your head. It's a better weapon than a gun, in my opinion. But I don't want to inflict my opinion on you. If you want to have a gun and you're a law-abiding citizen, the Constitution that I've taken an oath to uphold gives you the right to have a gun, and I accept that. And I'd like to, you know, if that's what you want, that's fine with me. I just want to keep it safe.
Right. Oh, I can understand that. I mean, something we have to figure something out because I don't think it's working the way we're doing it. And to be able to give people the sense of protection and security they need, and in whatever areas in the rural communities or along the border, you know, that should happen. But all these people who have such mental problems and emotional problems, that's how we need to stop their access to guns, and we need to get involved, and we need to have mental programs in place. Because remember, that guy who was at the Navy Yards had mental problems and had tried to get help and was refused. Right. So, you know, everyone, including, you know, my older son, thinks Ronald Reagan was a great communicator and a great guy. And one thing I remember for Ronald Reagan was when he basically stop funding mental health programs. Because I remember being in New York, and overnight, all of a sudden, it was full of homeless people who had real mental problems. And it became a real issue for everyone's security because they would, it's almost like the doors opened and they threw them on the streets. I'll never forget that. It was like overnight. So since that point in time when he decided to stop funding mental institutions and clinics, I think that's why we're suffering now. And it's going to take quite a bit of time and money to try to build that back up so that we can get people the help they need.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, it's a complex problem. So just banning guns isn't going to solve it. And you're right. You know, like I say, I've made a personal choice about guns, but I grew up around guns. I know how to use a gun. I'm not afraid of guns. But things have changed. You know, I had access to guns when I was a kid, when I was a teenager. Many of my friends whose fathers were World War II veterans had access to guns, but we just didn't think about coming down to the school and shooting everybody because some girl refused to go out with us or because we had seen some video. Of course, we didn't have video games, but, you know, that we had seen something on TV or something that inspired us to do that, or because we wanted 15 seconds of fame. So right. You're right. It's not just guns. There's a lot more involved in this, and mental health does play a big, big role. I think this man that would shoot four of his relatives, his nieces and nephews, is disturbed. And of course, now these six people are dead, and this one little 15-year-old girl who's left is an orphan. But guess who's still alive? The guy that did it all. And he's going to get the psychiatric treatment probably that he needed before he picked up the gun. So you're right. We have to do something about getting people the help they need and keeping the guns out of the hands of the people that shouldn't have them.
That's right. It's just a bad situation. And I was looking at the time, and we're almost, we've got 2 minutes, because what I wanted to talk about, and I think maybe what we'll do is maybe we can talk about it next time, is the $3.7 billion that Obama requested to deal with the border crisis issue, you know, with all the children coming abroad. And I was, it was a very interesting, I was kind of doing research about what that money entails, and it's, you know, for lawyers, for health issues, for, you know, to give, to treat these children who are obviously probably not in the best of health. And one thing I wanted to just say about that, I remember at the big border station in Douglas, they were saying that there's now tuberculosis is really coming back in the United States because it's being brought in by, you know, the illegal immigrants, because a lot of, you know, these diseases are showing up again. So even though we may not want to spend the money, we might have to, simply because there's so many people coming to into our border. So we need to talk about that.
Yep.
Maybe next weekend. There's a lot of big issues that are going to be, you know, be we're going to have to be faced with very soon in the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely. So call in, get your questions together, and call in, folks. And we'll see you next week. And remember, if you're available on Tuesday and you live in Washington, D.C., come out and help us lobby, because it's a good cause. We need to be equal citizens. So I'll give Kathleen the last word, and I'll just say thank you, America. See you next week.
Yes, and to all the people, you know, the World Cup is such a great game because it brings so many people together. And probably if you ever get a chance to go to one, do, because I know people in the United States think that we've got it all kind of, you know, World Series and stuff, but you've never, ever been in the, felt so much energy and just a feeling of excitement with people that are, you're rooting with us for the same country. It's just beyond belief. And I don't care what Ann Coulter says. She's totally nuts. This is one of the best games that bring everyone together. And it's a great team game. It requires a lot of endurance. These guys get hit all the time. They get knocked upside the head. And it's just an incredible athletic sport. And so my hat's off to all those who participated. What a great game. Can't wait to next time.
And you know what? That's the one thing that Kathleen and I absolutely agree on. Ann Coulter is nuts. Thanks,
yes,
America.
Yes, she is. Good night, America. Thank you for listening.
Give the people their right to vote.